Blog Talk Radio.
Monday is DJ Sean and Doc Honeycutt in 60 minutes right here on Hilltop Radio Show. What's going on, Doc? You heard it through the grapevine.
What's going on today? What's going on?
Did you hear it through the grapevine today?
I heard it through the grapevine. Yes, I did.
That's right. Another exciting Monday here on the Hilltop. So how was your weekend, man?
Oh, so let me see. My weekend was, you know, since the city is when the city opened back up, and when everybody decided that they, you know, needed to have a voice by protesting, that made me work extra hard. Like, I have to work extra hard because, you know, when things like that happen, people, you know, tend to get sick because of the heat, or they're in fights. They have to come to ER. So yeah, my weekend was working.
That was good. I had a week. My weekend was pretty good. You know, I relaxed and you know, just catching up on a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just gotta not answer that damn phone and just catch up on those work, make those extra phone calls that's needed, and I feel good. Today is Monday. I feel good. You know, a good week. We got an awesome week. Awesome week.
Yeah.
You know,
we always have an awesome week, though. To me, like, I think, you know, we bring it every single time, every single day.
Oh, yeah. News, you know, the news just gets, bigger and better. Colin Powell was in the media today talking about that. Trump needs to do a lot better than what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the former Secretary of State says the same thing. We're going to have the economy where I think Trump is trying to go back to the good old days of Civil War. Back in the, you know, have people against one another and have family against family, brother against brother. You know, he's trying to destroy what, you know, took Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Harriet Tubman and, you know, what's the other leader there in South Africa? Nelson Mandela. You know, these guys that really built to try to get more done for the black race. And what they've created and done, he's trying to tear it apart with his racial comments, with his racial tweets. And it's just, it's ridiculous how these people that in the government back this man and they know he's wrong. I would love to be a fly on the wall and just hear what's actually being said behind closed doors with him and some of these racist white people that are in the government that are supposed to be for the people. You know, it took another black man to be murdered in broad daylight right on TV to have countries from Canada all the way to the UK all the way to Australia all the way to Brazil to say, you know, enough is enough. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I wanted to ask you, why do you think this one was the one? Like, because it's been happening. But why do you think, like, George Floyd was the one that broke the camel's back?
I think it won, Doc. It was shown from the beginning to end, so they can't say, oh, it was parts that were missing and stuff like that. And black people is just getting tired of bully, racist police officers that just pick on the weak and just find that, you know, certain people to fuck with. Pardon my French. And this one really set home because you got Trayvon Martin. This dude is walking the streets after 911 told him to stop following him. You know what I mean? Plain as day. Of course, you know, that's in Florida, you know, and that's a racist state, and that's a Republican state. Then Eric Garner, you know, in New York, the first one. The first one that really said, I can't breathe. You know, cops messing with him. You know, those cops were... not charged. You know, and then the young lady that you had three events within, you know, you had the young man that was jogging that was ambushed and shot and killed.
Down
in Atlanta. Then you had the young lady that was
3 weeks ago, 3 months ago, the same incident. Like, almost, but we never hadn't heard anything about his.
You don't hear anything about it. So the black people just get, they just fed up. We're fed up. We're tired. We're tired of can't walk without being harassed. There was an incident, they showed this morning on the news. I can't think of where it is. This white cop was, you know, the protesters were sitting down and a white cop just come and bullied and pushing people over. Then it was another officer that went and pushed him. It was a black officer. She was a female, and she pushed him and jumped all in his face. And this is what these police officers, these are what these captains, lieutenants, police chiefs, and sheriffs and stuff is talking about. Other officers have to step up because now the government is trying to find a way to pass a law where police officers are starting to be held, you know, if you have five police officers and two of them accountable for their actions and two of them get in trouble and three of them don't step up to the plate, all of them getting charged with the same thing.
Yep.
And I mean, it took, you know, a long time to do this, but this man is dead, but he died being a hero as well, too. So now he's helping. He's doing a lot from the grave. You follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
A lot from the grave. A lot from the grave.
Yeah.
A lot from the grave. And, go ahead.
Let's do our disclaimer.
Yes, go ahead, do that.
Our opinions, and we are entitled to our opinions. We're not telling you to go by anything that we say. We're only making suggestions, and this is for entertainment purposes only.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you for that. We got to do that. I think we need to do that before we come on the air every week, but it's all good.
Every single time.
Every single time. I do have a next week, next Monday, here on DJ Sean and Doc Honeycutt in 60 Minutes. I do have a former NFL player. I played with the Los Angeles Rams, and he played in Canada. And he's going to come on. His name is Cato Hitson. And he's going to come on next Monday night and talk about the NFL. You know, Drew Brees' comment Now you have other sports figures like Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal coming to the aid of Drew Brees. You have some of his teammates that are still kind of, should have ran your mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
About that. But the main thing is, haven't heard anything from the Saints, New Orleans Saints coach. Coach Payton hasn't said anything yet. The front office of New Orleans Saints haven't said anything yet. The commissioner hasn't said anything yet, other than that he understands why the players took knees. Okay, so now the question that we're going to be talking to Mr. Henson is, what about Colin Kaepernick? You know, he was blackballed from getting a job. So now which of these wealthy, rich-ass owners are going to get up off their ass and go ahead and hire this man so he can continue in playing football? You know what I'm saying? So that's the key thing. A lot of people say Minnesota Vikings should hire him, which makes a lot of sense. You know, he taking a knee. The man, Mr. Floyd, died in Minnesota. It wouldn't help. It would help Minnesota, and it would help the NFL as well, as that black eye that they put on this man and the black eye that they put on other teams that put on other black athletes if they took a knee. So now Trump is in the media talking about, oh, you're going to allow your players to take knees and disrespect the flag. Well, you disrespected the flag when you came into office. You've been very disrespectful as well, too. So, you know,
on all levels, on every level.
Yeah. And people are starting to wake up and starting to see. Yeah, man. I mean, when Condoleezza Rice says, yo, you need to get the hell off the Twitter, man. You know what I'm saying? You need to do what's going on. When you have these high ranking Republicans and they're, you know, telling this man stop doing this, now all they have to say is, okay. One of them has to say is, okay, I know I'm a Republican, but I'm putting my vote with Biden. Do you know how many black people and white people is going to follow that endorsement for this man?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. So another current event was, I don't know what happened. I came in on the end of it, but CPI had pulled, the Panthers pulled their contract and some other, I think, NFL teams and sports teams pulled their contract from CPI because of an email that their CEO or president had wrote. Did you hear anything about that?
No, I didn't. Uh-uh.
This email link, it leaked. And I heard it on the news, and I know the Panthers had cut ties with him. And I talked to my cousin, and she said that some of the basketball teams had as well. I think it was the Hornets. So I would like to know what this email was that leaked. It was something about the protest and they're killing each other anyway. Whatever it was stuff that shouldn't have been said.
Oh, wow. I'm about to find that. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he missed and sent it out to somebody that, you know, he thought it, you know, he, you know how you, like, if you think that you done closed that page out, closed the page out, and you sent the email and you sent it to the wrong person, like a team player or something.
Now, CTI is a big corporation that's a lot of sports.
Security.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
the security,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. So that made the news. And of course, there's a high, the cases of COVID-19 is really, really increasing in our city, and they're telling everybody that if you have been in any kind of large groups, because we're in phase two, if you have been in any large groups, that you need to be tested. And I think, like, over on Saturday one day, the cases had risen up to, like, 1,300 in one day.
Mm. So you think that these states have opened up too quickly?
In my personal
opinion,
I think that they opened up too quickly, and when we went into phase two, it's like everything we had worked for, it was kind of like go ahead and open up. Like, it wasn't really a whole lot of boundaries with phase two. I thought we would have been, we would have been a little bit more restricted. Only thing that we didn't do is open the gym and the bars. But it's like, okay, let's open up everything else, the restaurants, the nail shops, just everything that you can't really stay sick, keep your distance. Like, it just didn't make sense to me.
Well, it goes back again. Our guest is on, too, as well. I'll let you know.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I'm just going to say this, and we'll bring the guest over. It goes back to these, and this is my opinion, and, everybody knows that I'm, my mouth sometimes can be a pistol or a gun. Go to these rich ass people that donated a bunch of tons of money for a campaigning fund for these governors complaining, and they already got tons and tons and millions of dollars in their account, and they still greedy as hell. And for this man to not really look at the numbers and worried about an election, he's killing people. And all these other idiot ass governors as well, they're doing the same thing. Yeah, because of people and money. It's all about money. It's all about the dollar. It's all about the cream. Cash rules everything around me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The cheddar, the endo.
Yeah, and, like I said, when they opened phase two, it was just like it was just wide open. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm just, me as a medical, practitioner, I take this seriously because, I'm on the front line and I see this stuff firsthand. But a lot of people that has not been affected by it, or they don't know anybody that, has tested positive or has been sick, they don't take it as serious. But you have to see these people and see these ventilators down their throats. And, what I'm saying? If they experienced it one time, they would feel differently about it.
Well, Doc, here's the issue, and then we'll leave it at that, and then we'll get our guest on. I can't go by everybody dying over the virus because... What the hell we have the state medical examiner's office for? I haven't heard anything from them saying all this. All we're hearing is from the doctors in the hospitals.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? Because if it was me and I had a loved one, I was like, okay, I want to hear from the medical examiner. Once I hear from that person, I'm good, because don't the state has a right to come in and check every person that does? That has passed away? Isn't that the thing?
But, I think not just come in. I think that it has to be ordered.
Okay.
I don't think they can just be like, oh, I'm here at their office, and, oh, we're going to go to check him because he died. No, I think it has to, be ordered. But, it's awesome that we got a guest tonight that's going to really definitely give us some insight being he had COVID-19, so he can really tell us somebody that has experienced it. So I'm glad
okay.
It's like the right timing. Yeah, definitely.
Well, his mic is open, and welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me on. My name is James McCoy. I'm the president of the Urban Sharpshooters Gun Club up in Marlboro, Maryland. And we happen to have one of the hottest chapters right now in your city. So I thank Doc for giving us the hospitality and coming on your radio show and maybe appearing, you know, on future shows.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but,
thank you for coming.
Getting on what you guys were saying, I mean, it's amazing what's going on right now with all the protesting and all, but I have a daughter. She's 21 years old. She's in her third year of American University. And I could think of at night she stood at my door crying because I was infected from the COVID virus from a fellow coworker. And what a lot of us take as a joke is what Doc was saying, because I was listening into your show. It's not until you have someone close to you that
mm-hmm.
affected or infected with this disease that mm-hmm. it really lets you know that, hey, man, we need to stop playing around. We need to go get checked. And if tested positive, it's no guarantee that you're going to live or die. Looking at my own personal experiences, I was forced by my job to go get tested. And when the test came back positive, my throat went through my stomach because I didn't know and they didn't know. So what the prescription, recovery prescription was, you go home for 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
and isolate yourself and basically let your body heal itself. Depending on how strong your immune system can fight off the virus determines
mm-hmm.
if you're going to live or die or if you're going to have additional care or a visit to the hospital. So, I mean, I tell my friends, you know, I become somewhat the voice of reason. Social distancing is real. You know, you want to make sure you have a mask, gloves, you're keeping your hands clean. And you want to put it out there to where you see the people out protesting. Some don't have masks on. You know, some are out dancing and partying. Is that really a good deal? And could this be something that, you know, some people feel is targeted in areas of color? Because if you look on the map, wherever you see high percentages of African Americans, that's where you see high percentages of this virus. Even in areas in Florida where the virus isn't supposed to live, it's still taking our people out.
But in the beginning, when this disease virus came, it was strictly hurting the white race until black people started getting hit with it in the beginning.
Historically, not to cut you off, it was hitting the black community. It just wasn't
right.
being reported or identified.
I live in
Prince George's County, Maryland, which could be considered the wealthiest county in the world for African Americans. And within the state of Maryland, we have the highest reported cases of corona. And see, here's the ass kicker. A lot of people have the virus and don't know it because they haven't been tested. And you don't have enough testing material for everybody. So unless you have the symptoms and unless you have medical care, you may not be able to get tested. Or if you do, you're paying a whole bunch of money out the pocket. But on the flip side, because I had to send all my guys at work to be tested, if I live in Maryland, wealthiest county, Prince George's County, Maryland, wealthiest county in the whole country, right? And I want to get tested for corona, I may have to make an appointment. If I have insurance, you got to go to your doctor first, and your doctor writes you a prescription where to go if he can't do it in his office. Or you have to go to a patient first, and they will charge you about $300. Now, this is what they're offering the people in the African-American community. If I travel 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes away in D.C., where the white people live at, they test for free, and they have an abundance of test kits. That's an entirely different issue that we need to talk about, is the discrimination of health care within the African-American community. And I raise holy hell because, again, I had 12 people on my staff, and I had to get everybody tested. And it took almost 2 weeks because of insurance, because people didn't have the money. And finally, our company said, well, send them down and get them tested wherever you can, because it was so much red tape.
And I'm so glad that Michael Jordan actually put a facility up in the black community just for the reason that you just said. So I definitely can identify with that. He did. He put one on Freedom Drive here. So you don't have, all you have to do is show up, you know, even if you're not a citizen here. I think they don't ask any questions. They just want you to be tested.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. See, starting with, I'm not going to say your president, but this man who calls himself president, in the very beginning.
We call him 45.
There you go. In the very beginning.
Shit, I'm getting ready to take take 45 from his ass. But go ahead,
right,
man. I'm sorry.
He came out and said that this was a hoax. And from him saying this, a whole month went by before the healthcare community could take this seriously, and the damage was already done. And a lot of times the people that are poor, the people that are elderly, they're the ones that's most hardest hit. Now, I'm a president of a gun club. I got over 800 members nationwide. Out of that 800 members, I can think of probably 20 or 30 that lost people around the same time. Now, out of all the years in urban sharpshooters, are you going to tell me that all these people around the same time start dying from this disease? I mean, from a disease that's out there. That's what made us wonder. We had young people dying. We had old people dying. They all had the same symptoms. It was all flu-like symptoms. They went in the hospital. It turned into pneumonia. They died.
Right.
Mm.
Because it is a severe acute respiratory syndrome. And you do not, I mean, I don't know how many people have came to me and said, Doc, I think I had it, you know, back in 2019, December, November, you know,
exactly.
That's when it really was starting and nobody was being tested. They thought it was a flu or something. It's like, Doc, I think I had it. I had every symptom that they're saying. And, you know, and I'm like, you know, you may have.
You're right, Doc. My better half, back in December 31st, which is my daughter's birthday, she went to patient first because she was taking Mucinex. She thought she just had the regular cold or allergies or whatever was going on, because we really didn't have a winter. It was pretty mild. So she didn't think nothing of it. So she decided to go to patient first because she took Mucinex. For whatever reason, she wasn't getting better. Thank God that she went, because they told her she had pneumonia in both lungs, and had she tried to self-medicate, it could have gotten worse, where she could have been a victim of whatever's going on. We're going to say it's corona, but we know that it's something that's out here and it's taking the lives of African Americans.
That's true.
Right. So can you tell us, like, some of the symptoms that you experienced yourself?
Okay, I'll run the scenario now. I work for a company called Fleet Pride, and I'm the branch manager there, 12 people in our staff. Our outside sales manager, who comes in contact with God knows how many people a day or a week, he was telling us that people in his house were coming down with the flu, and his mother-in-law was probably in her 80s, healthy, walked every day, never had an aching or bone or complaint. Well, they took her to the hospital because she was having problems breathing, and, you know, they wanted to make sure she was okay. She stayed in the hospital 2 days, and she died. Shortly after she died, when they had the repast, everybody that was around her continuously got sick, or they got worse, where the guy who's the sales manager of my store, he went to the hospital. They told him he had COVID. He stayed in the hospital for about 3 weeks, and he's okay. But as a result, he infected just about everybody in that store, where they had to close the store down. You had people come in with, like, biohazardous suits to decontaminate everything. And then, you know, it could open back up. So when I went to get my test, you know, I just figured I got a sore throat. That was one of the symptoms. I felt real weak, like, you know, I was fighting off a cold. And when 48 hours after I had the test done, the result came back positive. Within 3 days, I was bed stricken to where I was having night sweats. I mean, I would go to bed like 9 or 10 o'clock at night after, you know, drinking things like tea, eating soups, a lot of vegetables. And for whatever reason, maybe 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, I would wake up because my T-shirt would be covered in sweat and I would be cold. You would have loss of smell. You have loss of taste. Sometimes you have body aches where, like, it starts in your neck where you get stiff. And, you know, you have diarrhea. But the worst part is with the congestion that you have. Some people have a cough. I didn't have cough. I just had, like, nasal drip. That stuff drains from your nasal passage, and it settles in your chest. And that respiratory infection, it starts there. It can go all throughout your body. See, what they don't tell you about coronavirus, if you have any underlying health issues, say if you have renal issues with your kidney, it will cause your kidney to shut down. If you're having issues with your lungs, it attacks your lungs where it becomes more difficult to breathe. And again, we're talking about this pneumonia state, and you end up dying. So they're still learning more about how it affects the body. And everybody, I mean, and different people, you know, everybody have, like, different symptoms. Some people have it. They self-quarantine. They never have fevers. They never have sweats. They never have loss of appetite or diarrhea. And what, you know, I have friends as doctors and nurses. They say because their immune system is a lot stronger and was able to fight it off, where someone else who has a weakened immune system, you know, the disease just runs havoc on your body.
Yeah, my daughter, I just want to say, my daughter had the virus for, yeah, she was condemned for, she lives in Frederick, Maryland. So I'm originally from Frederick, too, from Maryland as well. And she got hers by dealing with a patient from the nursing home she worked at, and she ended up with the no taste, no smell, and that girl drove me crazy for 2 weeks until she got her, you know, her smell and stuff back. And then she went back, they still tested her positive, and then a week ago she went back and she was cleared to go back to work. So yeah, just want to throw that out.
So what they say when you self-quarantine, the virus is supposed to have a two-week lifespan. So from the time that you're infected, meaning when you're showing symptoms, you quarantine for 2 weeks or when you test positive. After the two, if it doesn't kill you in 2 weeks, the virus is supposed to die or kill itself off because it can't survive past that, you know, duration of time. But the recovery period is different from other people because with me, it took me 3 weeks to really feel like myself. I probably dropped about 15 pounds, and still some things, the taste is back, but it's not 100%. And my doctor said, you know, in time, everything will restore. But you got to remember, you know, what this virus did to your body, and your body is still trying to heal from it. Something that I didn't know, though, is that our digestive system is our immune system. So for those who are not drinking a lot of water or they eat a lot of processed foods with white flour and bread and stuff like that, you know, our diet will help us fight off anything. You know, that's why they tell you go home, get some bed rest, do the old remedy with chicken noodle soup and orange juice and all. You know, we have to make sure that we're putting the right foods in our bodies to make us strong and to keep our immune system strong. And when we're stressed out, stress is the number one killer, and stress will shut down your immune system and allow all kind of viruses and stuff to enter our body that normally we could fight off, but because our immune system, our defenses are down, those viruses can, you know, play more havoc than if we were less stressed and more better nutritioned.
I felt that's how I feel. Like I tell everybody, you know, those remedies that we got in our kitchens. Like, I remember my mom used to put those onions on your head to get that mm-hmm. fever out of your body. You know, sometimes you have to just go back to what you have in your houses to, because you want to treat your body as a whole. So your body can heal.
I'll tell you something. I had club members in New York, maybe 4 or 5 people who come down with corona. None of them passed away, thank God. But it was scary. A few had to go to the hospital. And one, he told me some things that helped me along the way, what to eat, you know, to pray, meditate, make sure you get outside and get some sun. You know, you did something with the older people. The older people, when they got sick, they made sure that they got up out of bed and they moved around. Mm-hmm. And like any sickness, when you get sick, you weak and you don't want to get up. So you got to fight it. But I tell y'all the story, and you know, I feel like, you know, it's worth telling. About my 6th or 7th day after being diagnosed or tested positive, I couldn't sleep one night because every time I tried to breathe, it felt like somebody had pushed the front of my chest one way, and then somebody was behind me pushing my back another, as if the breath was being squeezed out my body. So I started praying. I got up. I'm walking around, pacing back and forth. And for whatever reason, I had to use the bathroom, which is kind of funny when I tell the story. So I went in the bathroom and was going to take a shower and go to the doctor. And I sat in the bathroom for a while with that shower running, and it was real hot. And the steam that was created from that shower, I started to breathe. And where I felt like I was suffocating, I guess the Lord heard my prayer, because as I sat there and I struggled to breathe and the steam went down my nose, it opened up my passages. And the nastiest stuff came up out my chest. It was chalky, meaning it was kind of rough. The taste was gone, but this stuff tasted nasty. And I probably coughed maybe 20 or 30 minutes getting that stuff up. Then felt well enough where I could lay back down and get some sleep. And every day after that, I took like maybe 2 steam showers a day. And that steam really helps the body.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow.
Not only did it help me breathe, but it was like being in a sauna. The sweat was just pouring off my forehead, running down my ears. I mean, the more that I sweat, the more I could feel my chest starting to loosen up, and the more I could feel that stuff coming back up out my throat where I wanted to cough it up. So I tell people, you know, take that hot shower, you know, before you go to bed. Maybe you want to stay there a while and just let the steam and all get down your throat. And you want to wrap up with real good. Like what Doc said, I had an onion in the room. My grandmother told me that an onion will zap all like the poisons and the bad stuff into the onion and away from you. So I had onions everywhere. Was eating onions to try to help, you know, break the cold or break the fever. And like I said, God is good. I'm still here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
Let me tell you guys something about corona and the protest. Now, a lot of people was just so, I guess, I don't know, you got cabin fever, because like most cities, and I take it Charlotte was the same way, Maryland, we were on lockdown too. Only essential workers could go out. Most people were working from home. Some people laid off. So a lot of people was just tired of being home doing nothing. And then you start seeing things taking place where, you know, police officers were doing things that they shouldn't do. And then the straw that broke the camel's back is when you see the brother on the ground, you see a man over top of his neck. And you notice I didn't say race or anything like that. We saw a man on the ground. We saw another man who happened to be a police officer with his knee on the man's neck. And the man is saying, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And that man just sat there like it was nothing. And the pain that was created from America seeing this take place made everybody forget about corona. And my daughter, again, being a third year student at American University, I warn her about going out in the protest and all because I'm real active in the community. And she looked at me and said, Dad, some things worth dying for. So although it's corona out there and people know that this could possibly be a death sentence or they could get sick, they're willing to put aside their own personal health to get out there and stand for a worthy cause.
Yeah, but not only you had it here, you had it in other countries.
Right.
Yeah, you had it in other places as well, too. Yep.
Tell us what that, because you went out, what kind of experience have that with
Today was actually my first day back to work after being out for about 3 weeks, and I'm still not 100%. I'll walk, and I like to walk maybe about 5 or 6 blocks, and I'm winded because I was not really mobile for that duration of time, and now my body is trying to readjust. And sometimes I tell people still, I feel a little winded. I might talk and then have to catch my breath or whatever because my lungs still aren't 100% the way that they were before I tested positive. But it was no way, and watching my daughter and her girlfriend, you know, they asking me, well, what should we do? You know, and I'm like, if you go down there, you have to go down there for a purpose. Just don't be out there to be out there. Be out there with a purpose, you know. So when I went out, I'm the founder of a gun club. And after seeing so many different versions of what's taking place, I had to go down there for myself. So I parked maybe 4 or 5 blocks away from the White House. And I wobbled my behind down there with my Urban Sharpshooters T-shirt. And the people, when I walked into what we call Ground Zero, like Lafayette Square, just across from the White House, where Mr. Presidente put the fence up to separate the people from him, I was like, I felt like Malcolm X when he went to Mecca, just to see people of all races acting as brothers and sisters. I mean, you would look over to your left and you would see a group of white people giving out water, giving out hand sanitizer, giving out fruit and bananas and stuff. You would walk a little further and you might see real Christians, meaning color don't matter. Asian, black, white, all singing We Shall Overcome Someday. You saw a bit of everything there, but that was a reflection of a unity that this country has never seen before, at least this generation has never seen before. And what was more striking to me, I saw more white people carry Black Lives Matter signs than I did black, and we're in a city, Chocolate City, Washington, D.C., is still every bit of 60%, 70% black.
Mm-hmm.
Because white people are, the white people are getting tired of what the black race goes through. There is honest white people in this world that get sick and tired of seeing, you know, us getting murdered, you know, us being harassed, you know, kids dying, things like that. That, and they do care. You'd be amazed how many white people were in the civil rights movement. You know, you only hear about some handful, but it was more than people thought it was.
Exactly. And I think these are the children and the grandchildren of the civil rights leaders. I mean, what's weird, I was with one organization, and it was called DC Freedom Fighters. And this one guy told me he went online, or they came about because somebody went online and said that they were going to meet up at Lafayette Square. And this person probably has like 5,000 friends, and it was shared with somebody else who has like 5,000 friends. And you had people, you said you're from Frederick, Maryland. They traveled from near Gaithersburg, Maryland, from Potomac, Maryland, Woodbridge, Virginia, Southern Maryland, and everybody congregated to be a part of the D.C. Freedom Fighters. And then you had various groups from Black Lives Matter. You had just so many different groups of people there, like you said, that want to coexist. They're tired of seeing the division. They want somebody to bring people together. And the most beautiful thing that I think I saw was the D.C. Mayor Bowser. When Trump decided that he wanted to bring in not National Guard, but active troops to protect him and to show a show of force. She showed him who was really in charge because she changed the street name to where the White House is located. So instead of it being 16th and Pennsylvania, now it's called Black Lives Matter Plaza, and it's in that big, beautiful yellow writing. So if you look out his window, he can't miss it. That's power.
Right.
Ain't shit he can do about it. Ain't a damn thing he can do about it. He can't try to put together a rem demanda to try to change it back, and this he can't do shit but look at it or go to another window and look out the other window. I'm glad of it.
Right.
There's nothing he can do about it.
A lot of the activities that I saw down there were voter registration drives. The youth, this is definitely a youth movement because 21 and 30-year-olds are like the heartbeat of this. I mean, like I said, I felt like Malcolm X going to Mecca and something that humbled me. I saw two people that I grew up with. I'm from Washington, D.C., and D.C. was violent when we grew up there. It was called the murder capital. And they had all these pictures on the gate that Mr. Trump put up to keep the people away from him. They didn't realize that that gate was like a wall that was going to memorialize all the African-Americans that was killed by white police officers. And like I said, I'm reading the signs, Black Lives Matter. I'm reading the signs in police brutality. I'm looking at Trayvon Martin. I'm looking at Mike Brown. I'm looking at Tamir Rice. And as I start to look at some of these names, I start to think of the friends that I lost in Washington, D.C., not too far from where we were standing. And I could feel tears coming down my eyes, not really knowing I was crying. And then I started shouting Black Lives Matter, and then other people started shouting Black Lives Matter because I knew their lives matter. I know my life matter. I know my kids' life matter. So very humbling if you can go down and be a part of that, because it's one thing to see it on TV. There's another thing to be there where you got 90 million things going on at one time, but yet you can focus on some handmade signs that someone made from somewhere else just because they're tired of seeing black lives being taken so easily and the people who take them escape justice.
Yeah, we, you know, you said 21-year-olds to, you know, we need to get them at 18 to understand what a voter registration card is. We need them younger than that because if they're out here, if these 18-year-olds can learn how to put together a website and Twitter and Facebook and IG and TikTok, this TikTok thing is popular now. You know, when these parents, when your 18-year-old has a birthday, along with putting money in that card, give them a photo registration card. You can vote at 18.
Right.
You got to start. 21 is legal enough to drink. 18, you can get a voter registration card in a person and then as a parent explain to them why is it important. Why is it important for you to fill this out? Why is it important come November you need to go and vote where you're supposed to be at? It's as simple as that. I wouldn't wait until 21 years old. You have to do it now. As soon as they turn 18, bam, here, fill this out. Go take this done because their vote counts more than our vote does. And the younger we get them in these voting pools and understanding what's going on in this world, the better we off come November instead of seeing this clown another fucking 4 years. Plain and simple.
The best thing that I think has happened with the corona, with social, not necessarily the social distancing, but with everybody being on lockdown, it's kind of made the family be a family again, where people have to be around one another. And this conversation is something that all black people in all generations can relate to. A lot of times there's like the generation divide where the music and the culture are like completely different, because I saw some young guys dancing. I could not figure out how they were doing the stuff that they were doing. And I figured I'm a good dancer. It was in between break dancing and river dance. You know, they just created something entirely new. But the conversation now, because it's on the news, it's in your face. My kids didn't like me when I'm talking about racism. They didn't like me talking about police abuse, what could happen if you're out late at night and you go in the wrong neighborhood and somebody see you and they pick up the phone and call the police, and the police come out five deep because they feel you don't belong. Now they see, Dad know what he's talking about. This shit is real, you know? Now they come in and asking me, Dad, has that ever happened to you? You know? And I'm bad because as a father, as much as I try to teach my kids, a lot of what I'm seeing, they're not retaining. Because I told them stories when I was 18 and 19, had police come up on me, guns blazing, because maybe I'm in an area that they're profiling me, you know, thinking I'm doing something wrong because of my skin color. So the topics are on the table. The youth, the young people, they're understanding exactly what's going on. The stuff that we're trying to warn them about, they're seeing. They're reacting. They want to do something. You know, the solutions are being put on the table. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And it's not just black people. It's all people. But what's shocking, you see, I think I was telling Doc earlier, this is the first time in history I've ever seen a black movement that's being led by white people.
It's got to be, because we don't have no heroes right now. Who we got as a hero?
Yeah, but we have people, though.
No. We need a hero. We need a leader. We need a hero like Superman, the Incredible Hulk.
This is a movement, it's not a moment no more. It's a movement. This is a movement without leadership. It's the youth that they decided to jump out and call their friends in public and protest. Like, I got
my opinion, we need that leader that's going to get us through this epidemic, get us through this situation with the police, get us this situation with these elections coming, making sure they ain't BS with the machines and like they did 4 years ago. We need someone that everybody's going to jump around. I'm not talking about individual people in the community. I'm talking about one person. Yeah. I'm talking about someone like a Malcolm X or a Martin Luther King. Because some people can give themselves a self-title, but are they fit to run for everybody to run behind them? Because it's worse little thing to be into a most tragic.
Everybody is not a leader. Everybody can't lead.
I think, too, what this movement has shown, and it's a problem that we have as a people. I don't think that our generation grooms their successors, meaning that you look at how this country is built. You know, every 4 years you're going to have a president, and that president is going to continue or build on what the last president did. Well, we can look at our institutions like the NAACP. We can look at other organizations. When I look at the members within those organizations, it's like looking in church. They don't have a lot of young people, and that's the problem, because when they die out, nobody knows what to do.
So well, that's because the NAACP ain't recruiting the young people. They're recruiting the old people that are still on the council or still in the House of Representatives, still in the Senate. They rely on them instead of going to the youth and getting them on board.
But I tell you what, if they got them on board, they would have social media.
But what does the churches
board,
do? What is the main thing that churches do? The first thing that these pastors and reverends and stuff, we got to go out and get the youth. We got to bring the youth into the look. Why? Because the youth is the future. The NAACP, they need to get up off their behinds and recruit. Go out there and get some youth. You got it, man. They don't. I ain't heard them. My aunt was a NAACP president, and she ain't ever go out. And I'm talking about her. Yeah, she ain't ever go out and recruit no young people to come on board for no NAACP, man. So that right there, I know that for a fact. They ain't recruiting young people, man.
I identified that yesterday as a problem because we don't have, and I looked at the Congressional Black Caucus, right? We have all our civil rights leaders, they're safeguarding the civil rights. After they're gone, who are we going to have in the room that can warn the people or that could block someone trying to erase the progress that's been made? So that's why we have to have successes. We got to start grooming people because they're dying off. And I just don't see where they have anyone to hand the mantle to because that's not how we are programmed. I think sometimes you get some of the older leaders, they don't want to share the throne. And then when they die out, because they haven't created a successor, the kingdom fades away.
But who puts them there? Who puts the old people there? Who puts the people that are still president and vice president? They're the people within. Bro, you can't debate with me on this one, man.
But this is what I'm saying, brother. When they started out, they were the youth. But the problem is they haven't...
Let me tell you something, man. They were never NAACP. Those people that you're talking about, they were never the youth. They were old coming in. My aunt was old coming in. They're not going out there getting those college students that are graduating from college Let me ask you this. On social media, anywhere on social media, have you seen any NAACP across this nation asking for people to be a part of their organization? Have you?
You have never. Nope.
Okay.
And social media is what?
Social media is one of your powerful tool right now to get these young people on board to be a part of this organization because they don't want to bother with these young people, man.
Yes, see, but a lot of your older people.
Man, I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, man.
And we have to say that. So we identified one thing that we know that's a problem that we can fix.
Because I hear you, man.
If you don't have an organization of change pushing to maintain what we got, but to keep the wheels turning for advancement, then the people that's fighting against us can destroy that organization and take us back instead of our race going forward. That was something
I'd rather join the Black Panther Party, the Black Panther movement, before I join NAACP. Or Black Lives Matter out of D.C. I'd rather join them because NAACP, they stuck on their old ways. They come in the community and they don't help out like they normally did back in the 60s and 70s.
Because they had nothing.
Come on, man, it's a fact. It's a fact. They had old people then.
When time changes, everything has to change.
Exactly. NAACP, think about probably the most famous black lawyer who became the Supreme Court justice. And we ain't talking about Clarence Thomas either.
I'm talking about Thurgood Marshall.
He was with the NAACP, and he was a lawyer with them when he was young. So you had young people who were pushing for change with this organization because that was their primary goal, was the advancement of our people. And the young people that are old now were the civil rights leaders. Where are their successors in their organization?
Man, I'm telling you, man. Them old people are still old. They still don't want change within NAACP. I open up the phone line and bring one on here if they want to come on here and debate it. It's the truth.
I know the national president. He probably would come on, but he's an old fart too. He's not
See what I'm saying?
They have no youth. We identified that.
The question that I'm asking is why they're not going after the youth. Why aren't the youth interested in being being a part of the NAACP?
Brother,
you know what I'm saying?
Look at the church.
The church
doesn't have the youth anymore.
Man, nobody don't
not
want
like
no damn Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton running to the rescue, man. I don't even trust them with my bank account.
We need our future. We need the future to be a part of the NAACP. And like you said, I want to know why. Why is there no young people? Because they don't.
Well,
they don't want to deal with young people. That should not be.
They're still sitting around singing "We Shall Overcome" and all this and that, man. We didn't overcome too much now, man.
The We Shall Overcome protest is needed because that's going to fuel the riot.
It's not.
People are funny.
Let me tell you, man.
Look what
it's by any means necessary right now. Right now, it's by any means necessary.
I'm with you on that, but understand.
It's by any means necessary.
In order to protest, you're mobilizing the people. Once the people are mobilized, the anger is going to take control. And rioting is American is apple pie. Looting is rioting is apple pie. So when you're saying by any means necessary, I can guarantee you.
The thing is, it's not the black people that are looting. It's the white people that are coming and joining the protesting that's making the black community look bad in their community. I could bring a brother on out of Baltimore that was on last week, and he'll tell you the same thing. The government has an agency that has these white people, and they send them to these cities and stuff, and start destroying the cities and hyping up the young black people so they can destroy
can
their city
that.
Too.
It's
fact. It's fact.
Brother.
Look at it which way, man.
In Washington D.C. Here we go again. In Washington D.C. during the rioting. You can look in some areas. In the 60s, they said black people burned down stuff in their own community where they lived at. We ain't own the shit, but yeah, that's true. We did burn the stuff down. Fast forward 60 years later, the majority of the rioting and looting starting with Washington, D.C., was not in the black sections of town. This was directed at the white sections of town. In Richmond, Virginia, where they were setting police cars and stuff over, they were downtown by the courthouse. They even broke into the Sons of Confederacy headquarters and burned a Confederate flag, which everybody should be praising those people. So with me, I look at it this way. White people might be out there for a different reason than we're out there for, but yet we can all stand on common ground and we can have similar ideas.
You get in touch with Grandpa from NAACP and let him know we want him to come on the show.
You know what I did?
And we got some questions.
I would do that. I took my gun club, Baltimore chapter, the Irby Shop Shooters, and I made sure this year that each one of those club members joined NAACP because, number one, we have a problem within the gun community. The Second Amendment is constitutional rights. And it's also a civil rights issue. And if the NAACP is the champion for civil rights, then the NAACP should be the first organization to stand up for African-American gun rights.
This is what we're going to do, man. This is DJ Sean and Doc Honeycutt in 60 Minutes. We're a little over, man. We're gonna thank you for being a part of the show, man. And we're going to invite you back for a part two of this, man. And it's some good debates here, but you know my opinion is NAACP is still stuck on old people that really can't get out there and control a younger generation. Ain't gonna listen to a bunch of old people that are stuck in their ways. You know what I mean? Like get up, do your toast the same time, your coffee every day, get your newspaper, sit in the corner, and this and that. That's what they do every day. We don't want that. I don't want my daughters and grandkids to be a part of something that where they're not going to get nothing out of it. You know what I mean?
It's
called training. I teach my kids. Trust me. I teach my kids and my grandkids on what's what and what's right and what's wrong. And I always tell them, if anybody get in your face and you've done nothing wrong, you defend yourself to the fullest. Believe that. Because that's how I am. But what's the name? James, let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media, man.
Hey, check me out on – my name's James McCoy. I'm president of the Urban Shop Shooters Gun Club. Check me out on Facebook, Urban Shop Shooters LLC, or you can follow me on Instagram, the_UrbanShopShooters_Gun Club.
All right. Doc Honeycutt. Thank you, sweetheart.
Doc Honeycutt Enterprises on IG and Doc Honeycutt on Facebook. Also catch me right here on the Hilltop Radio Show Wednesday nights. We have an amazing show Mondays and Thursdays. Check us out. Doc Honeycutt and DJ Sean, 60 Minutes, full of whatever. We don't even know. But also catch me on 105.3 every Sunday. With DJ Wiz doing the mix every Sunday morning, 105.3 R&B.
All right, everybody. I want to thank everybody. You come back next Thursday at 7 p.m. We got the second part of Dr. Ted Sutton from Baltimore, an activist, and he was in the mix with the riots and with the Freddie Gray murder. And we also got Pastor Virgil Pinckney. They'll be back on for part two of the debate that we had with them last week about where do we go from, you know, here now that, you know, Freddie Gray died and becoming a hero. George Floyd. I'm sorry, you guys out there listening. And also, you can tune back in with me at 9 p.m. right here on Hilltop. We got the Indie Artist Live radio show. This is a showcase. We got two of the hottest independent artists, one from Atlanta, the other from New Orleans. And also, you make sure you tune back in here on Wednesday night, my birthday. We got the Quiet Storm, Love After Dark, and we got the Force MDs will be in the house with us. And then Thursday night, we got the Sequence will be in with us on the plug. And then Friday, Black Friday, here on the Hilltop, we got a doubleheader for you. We got Keith Burke and the Mary Jane Girls right here on the Hilltop Radio Show live with DJ Sean, Doc Honeycutt. On behalf of the Hilltop Radio Show, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Be blessed. Don't forget to hit the like. You guys have a good evening. Until next week, we'll see you when we see you. Peace.
Peace and blessings.
Yes.
Good night, y'all.
Mm-hmm.